Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tears and shame in South Korea for the last 3 weeks. Shame before the world for a monumental scientific hoax in stem cell research. Snuppy, the puppy, was indeed cloned, we are now told. But the towering claims of giant South Korean strides in human therapeutic cloning of stem cells, bogus. Therapeutic cloning is the stem cell procedure so promising in its medical possibilities that it had Korea issuing a postage stamp showing a lame man standing up out of a wheelchair. But with Korea's claims now shattered, the global map of research and competition has shifted again. Up next on Point, after the hoax, the real players and real frontier of stem cell research now. Joining me in the studio is Gareth Cook, science correspondent for the Boston Globe. He won a Pulitzer Prize last year for his coverage of stem cell research and the debate around it. Gareth Cook, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
First, just the scale of the scandal, the crumbling claims in South Korea. Give us a sense of just how big a deal this is, Gareth.
This is a huge deal. I think this has to be one of the most dramatic cases of scientific fraud that we've seen in a long time. I say that because of all the expectation and hype that surrounded it. A lot of people looked to this discovery as opening a gateway into all kinds of new treatments, and especially in South Korea, they issued a stamp showing stem cells and a man stepping out of a wheelchair. And I think here in this country, we've seen some of that hype as well. So this is really a huge thing. And also, I think for scientists, it represents a huge setback.
Put in layman's terms for us, Gareth, what the South Koreans claimed to have done that it now turns out they did not do.
Well, what they claim to have done is created embryonic stem cells, which are matched to a particular person's DNA. Embryonic stem cells are very interesting to researchers because they are cells that can turn into literally any cell in your body, which opens up all sorts of ideas for how you might treat diseases. By being able to match a particular...
That is, if you have a bad liver, hypothetically, you create a new liver.
Absolutely.
From these.
You might be able to create new liver cells or new blood cells or repair a heart or repair spinal cord damage.
With all kinds of diseases in the target zone here, Parkinson's and you name it.
Exactly. So all sorts of diseases which we haven't been able to figure out how to cure, people think that embryonic stem cell research might one day lead to a cure. And it at least represents a very new and exciting area of science.
Now, the Koreans said, we've managed to clone embryonic stem cells, that is, to make an exact match so these would not be rejected by a patient in treatment if we got that far.
Exactly. Well, there's two things. First of all, eventually, yes, that's what you would hope for, is that you could use these to, like, Tom, if you had some sort of disease we were trying to treat, we would create clone cells, then create the type of cell you need to be treated, and we'd give them to you. However, most immediately, what scientists are interested in this for is to study diseases. So, for example, let's say you have a disease. I'm sorry to keep giving you these diseases, but let's say you have juvenile diabetes, which is a devastating disease, but we don't understand the genetics of it. We don't understand at a genetic level what the causes are. So we might create cloned embryonic stem cells that have that are a copy of your genes, and then see how they behave in a petri dish, see what goes wrong as they develop. So this gives scientists the ability to do experiments that they can't do right now.
What was so extraordinary about the South Korean claims? Why was this considered such an achievement when it was thought to be true in the scientific community?
Well, the thing that's interesting about it is from a biological perspective, what they did was very much expected. And I think that's very important for understanding this scandal, which is that people have done cloning with mice and pigs and all sorts of other animals.
So this was the big next step.
It just hadn't been done with humans yet. Mm-hmm. And basically what they said is, we figured out the recipe to do this with humans. The reason that was important is now we can do all this research using human cells, which obviously we're particularly interested because we want to understand human diseases. But But it was in the scientific community, everyone has thought this is just a matter of time before someone figures this out. So I think that may explain a little bit why people weren't more skeptical about this claim.
Weren't more skeptical. On the other hand, the kind of awe, admiration, celebration was huge because this is
Absolutely.
A hugely difficult thing to do.
Absolutely. It's very difficult. In fact, since no one's done it, we actually don't know how difficult it is.
And in the aftermath, we learned that Wang Wu-suk and his entire team had not done this. Basically, every claim has been disputed. The South Koreans themselves dove in and said, no, we didn't hit these high marks, period.
Absolutely. So they published not one but two landmark papers in the journal Science. And mm-hmm. both times they published these papers, there was international acclaim and international attention to this and excitement. It seemed that they were moving faster than anyone would have expected, that they were beating out researchers here and in other countries. And so the fact that both of these papers are pure fiction is just, I think, stunning.
So the goalposts have moved. What has actually been accomplished is radically different from what we thought just a few weeks ago. That's a sort of crashing down of what's been achieved. On the other hand, there's an opportunity in here. Some have already seen opportunities lost as a result of the South Korean claims. I want to turn now, if I may, to Dr. Robert Lanza. He joins us from Worcester, Massachusetts. He's vice president at Advanced Cell Technology, a biotech company working on cloning human stem cells. Robert Lanza, thanks for being with us.
Yes, good to be with you.
In 2000, what was it, 4, the South Koreans first came out with their big claim of a breakthrough. It had an immediate and direct impact on you and your company. Describe that for us.
Well, as far as the fallout for the company, I think, in the months following the publication of the fraudulent papers, it almost destroyed the company. Even though the scientists here had very serious reservations about the authenticity of that work.
How close were you to therapeutic cloning, human?
Well, we were here a hair's breadth away from generating stem cells using this cloning SENT when Wang published his paper in early 2004. We had actually generated embryos at the stage where we believe we could have generated stem cells.
And the result, when the Koreans came out, what happened to your work?
Well, our supply of donor eggs totally dried up, and again, it almost shut the company down altogether. You have to realize what was going on at the time. President Bush was threatening to criminalize the research, and there was really no hope of federal money. So we were barely hanging in there, and at least our investors thought we were doing good science, and then, boom, out of nowhere, we're suddenly behind some obscure group on the other side of the planet. It was like the Koreans had landed on the moon. And then to add salt to the wound, the Koreans published a second paper in Science that was almost too good to be true, and of course it was too good to be true. That was the last straw. The investor money dried up, the company went into a nosedive, and most of the research we were doing came to an abrupt halt. In fact, we didn't even have enough money to order pipettes, let alone to keep our SCNT program going. We had to freeze down human retinal cells that we were planning to use to cure blindness, and we had even missed several payrolls and even had our telephone shut off once or twice. So it wasn't a good picture.
You have said that you believe the Koreans, this is a suspicion on your part, mm-hmm. but that the Koreans may have made the claims in order to head researchers like you off the pass, in order to get a jump and shut down operations competitors like your own, like you.
Well, they certainly succeeded, and I'm sure that they were expecting us to publish imminently, and in fact, we probably would have published something in 2004. Everyone says, well, why did he do this? In fact, he probably suspected that someone such as our group would publish soon thereafter to basically validate their findings.
So with the collapse of the Korean claims, what happens to commercial ventures like yours, Robert Lanza? Are you back up and in the game, or is that going to take time?
Oh, yeah. We've totally reinvented ourselves. We're now a public company. We have a new CEO, new investors, and we can finally do all of the experiments that we've been planning to do for years. We're focused very heavily on getting stem cell therapies into the clinic. For instance, we're working to generate retinal cells to treat blindness. We're setting up GMP facilities and functional and safety testing in animals that are currently underway.
And are you still looking at this human therapeutic cloning as your top goal?
Well, I think it's an important goal, and I think, as I mentioned, we were only a hair's breadth away, so I think that certainly, we're definitely planning to gear up to get that work underway.
Now we have biotech centers across the country. California's put a big $3 billion chip down on stem cells. Harvard has a big program in the UK, big programs going on. Where do you think the next big breakthrough will come from, Robert Lanza? Will it be an academic setting? Will it be in private startup company land like your own? Will it be in America? Will it be abroad?
Well, I think that, you know, research is definitely proceeding on many fronts. Certainly there will be major breakthroughs coming from both private universities as well as companies. I think there's a lot of exciting and profoundly important research going on. I think in addition to try to unravel some of the processes underlying human disease, there are lots of groups that are actively trying to generate cells and tissues that could be used for human transplantation. So you're likely to see papers coming out showing that stem cells can be used to repair damaged hearts. I think you'll be seeing neurons that will be transplanted into patients with spinal cord injuries. So again, there's a lot of exciting work. There will be many breakthroughs, and I think you'll be seeing them coming from, like I said, both universities and companies.
Robert Lanza, Vice President at Advanced Cell Technology. We hear the ambition still riding very high there, and we wish you luck. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Gareth, what do you think? Are we going to be right back to a hair's breadth away from this breakthrough soon, or is this now, is the can kicked way down the road?
Well, I think there's two things that are important to understand. First of all, we don't know how difficult this is because no one's done it. And until someone does it, well, we don't know how long it's going to take. And Bob is saying that he's made a lot of progress, but we don't know how close he is. And I don't think he really knows how close he is until he gets there. The second thing I think it's important to understand is that there is a long path between being able to clone and being able to actually help patients.
We're joined now in the studio as well by Dr. David Scadden. He is co-director of the Harvard Stem Cell Institute. They're waiting for approval to begin human cloning work, therapeutic cloning. He's also director of the Center for Regenerative Medicine at the Massachusetts General Hospital. He's a hematologist, oncologist, professor at Harvard Medical School. David Scadden, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
So what does the fall of the South Korean claims mean for Harvard's program?
Well, it's devastating for the field, as you know. This is an issue that, however, is representative of a technical problem, not a conceptual change in the way we think about these cells or the idea about how this process might proceed in the future. So our goals remain to continue to work with both embryonic and adult stem cells to now basically double our efforts to try to accomplish this nuclear transfer. And there are two groups actively setting that up, and we hope to begin that very soon. Both Kevin Agin and George Daly are proceeding, and we anticipate
where?
That those will begin soon.
Where?
So one of them is at the undergraduate campus at Harvard, and the other is at Children's Hospital.
Now, when you look around the world and across the country, where do you see the major centers of research on this frontier now? There's one at Harvard. Newcastle in the U.K. is very,
right.
very aggressive and successful on this front.
That's right. And those are really the two main centers at this point. As you heard from Bob Lanza, there's also an effort in the private sector.
Now, California put $3 billion down on stem cell research. We're going to hear from them in a moment, but does that mean that they're a leading player in this effort as well?
Well, we anticipate that will be something that will have a big impact on the field. At this point, there's still a number of hurdles for them to be able to actually get that money into play. So there is still an effort there that is virtual rather than actual. But we certainly hope that effort will complement some of the other activities that are ongoing. And as you know, in the absence of significant federal investment in this, places like California, Harvard, and some other private institutions are essentially going to be carrying the ball.
Let's look back for just a second. When Wang Woo-suk and his team in South Korea made their astounding claims about what they had accomplished, what was the buzz among researchers in groups like yours and around the United States? Did you say, you know, was it, holy smokes, that's astounding, they've won, we're done? What was the view?
Well, it was certainly a sense that it did come out of the blue. There wasn't anticipated success there. But I have to say, this is a process that had been established in the context of a number of veterinary centers, and they had a very strong one in Korea. This is a person who had a fairly distinguished career in that area. Dr. Wang had done it in other contexts. And so the idea that he had somehow been able to master the technical challenges was not so outlandish.
Is there an opportunity for the United States or the UK or others today that there wasn't understood to be a month ago when these claims appeared to be true?
Well, I think that's absolutely the case, the sense that that this was something that was already accomplished certainly took the wind out of the sails a bit from centers like ours. But I think at this point, there is still a recognized opportunity. But frankly, it's also something that we thought, if accomplished, could now leapfrog the field. We could all move on. the idea of getting these cells is really just the beginning. This is something that will now, we hope, be able to enable an understanding of these diseases, ultimately develop drugs for them, as well as possibly using the cells themselves as the therapy. That's not done. We have to go back. That is a clear problem for the field, but it's not one that we think is insurmountable. And it's important to recognize that there are activities that are moving on in parallel with this that we hope might be able to accomplish the same, even if the nuclear transfer itself remains problematic.
I mean, activities in stem cell research that even when you say the nuclear transfer, that is the cloning, essentially.
That's
the therapeutic cloning.
That's right.
What would be a substitute for that? Isn't that all important in on the path of potentially creating stem cells that you could use therapeutically to produce new, you name it, that a particular human needs?
Right. So that is a process that's been vetted in animal models, where you can take an adult cell and essentially reprogram its DNA so it now can behave like an embryonic cell and can make all those different tissue types. But the process is one that was accomplished by putting it inside a cell, in an egg. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to accomplish that without the transfer of the nucleus? Is it possible, for example, to fuse the adult cell with a more embryonic cell? Well, there are data now that suggest that that's true.
So in that case, Gareth Cook, we wouldn't see the big push to harvest eggs from young women to use in this research, part of what was controversial in the Korean program.
Exactly. I think there's two points here. One, that there may be other methods for generating these cells other than nuclear transfer, which might get rid of some of the ethical debate that we've seen over this. The other point, though, is that there are a lot of other ways of doing stem cell research that may lead to cures that doesn't require nuclear transfer at all. For example, stem cell research may lead to new drugs that can treat diseases. You don't necessarily need cells to treat diseases. So this is a setback, an important setback, but in one part of stem cell research.
David Scadden, the stakes are clearly very high here. There's a large incentive to claim advances. A lot of money and glory comes with that. Of course, if they're ultimately found to be fraud, you end up apologizing in shame, like Dr. Wong this week. But do you feel confident that we're going to be able to look forward with confidence in the research claims in this field? Or is the temptation to push what you've done too great, what one has done?
Well, I think there are the lessons from this example are very much that there is, in addition to the lucrative rock star potential of claims, there is also the tremendous downside. Dr. Wong is now, I think, a social pariah in Korea.
Who knows what exile awaits him?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I think this, while it's always going to be an issue of how people are able to balance those ambitions in life, that the hope here is that the basic principles of science will continue to be maintained, and the fact that science in its nature is a verifiable set of facts, and the idea that we will continue to have multiple different centers doing this work, validating each other's work, stepping on the platform that others have created, is something that invariably leads to a forward motion. Rather, it may take a stutter step here and there, which I do regard this as certainly being a significant one, but that ultimately the process itself is a very positive one and will lead to positive results.
I want to turn to another arena of stem cell research now, if I may. California, famously, not so long ago, Californians went to the polls and voted to spend $3 billion over 10 years to put California at the forefront in stem cell research. That has not entirely taken off at this point. I want to look in on what they're up to. Joining us right now, not from California, but from Osaka, Japan, is Dr. Arnold Kriegstein. He's a neural stem cell researcher and director of the University of California, San Francisco's Institute for Stem Cell and Tissue Biology. Arnold Kriegstein, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
So, Korea has dropped out or dropped back. What's happening with California's big $3 billion bet here? Is it in play now? Do you see a chance for California to move to the forefront in stem cell research?
Well, in a sense, yes, there is a vacuum now, and I think there are institutions like our own in California that intend to move forward. But first, let me just clarify one thing you said, the $3 billion that the voters have indicated they'd like to have spent over the next 10 years on stem cell research has not yet been spent. There are legal challenges, and that promises to keep it tied up in the courts for at least another year or so. So unfortunately, although there's a great deal of excitement and enthusiasm for all this, and we anticipate that there will be funds at some point in the future, it hasn't happened yet.
In a nutshell, what's the legal claim that has it tied up, Dr. Kriegstein?
Well, there are several challenges. Perhaps the leading one has to do with the constitutionality of the proposition, because although it's state funds, the proposition specifically states that for the first 3 years, they're beyond legislative interference the legislature has no real say about what happens to the money, and so there's a challenge that that actually is not constitutional. Those issues will have to go through a legal process that might include several appeals before the bonds will be free to be issued.
With the federal government not stepping up to fund therapeutic cloning research, California's $3 billion vote was seen as a huge play, maybe the major fiscal play in the country toward this. With that money sitting tied up in court, does it mean that California is hogtied for now, or are you moving ahead?
Well, I could just, for example, outline our own efforts. At UCSF, we've had a program in place for a number of years that involves stem cells, developmental biology, and has a component, an important component, that involves human embryonic stem cells. That's co-directed by Susan Fisher and Renee Riejo-Pera. And there's been a tradition for creating human embryonic stem cells for research purposes at UCSF. In fact, two of the lines that are approved on the presidential list, as it's called, were actually derived at UCSF. And that was prior, of course, to 2001. Since then, another 11 or so lines have been derived, and those have been, in a sense, improved in terms of the technology. They're reared on human feeder layers instead of animal feeder layers, so they're pathogen-free. They don't have animal viruses or proteins. So these are lines that have that are new since the presidential embargo on NIH funding for this kind of work. On the other hand, because of this policy, we are really unable, as you know, to mingle NIH and non-NIH funds in any way with any of these activities. And so that's really been a challenge. It's required us to create a special facility to do this kind of work.
Almost like a kosher kitchen, apart from the other federally funded work.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And none of us want in any way to jeopardize NIH funding, which is really critical to all of our activities. And so what we've decided to do is to invest in completely renovating space, gutting it. This is space that would otherwise be a perfectly acceptable laboratory is now being entirely gutted and then reconstructed with private funds and equipped with hoods and incubators and manipulators and so on, all of which are, again, funded and purchased privately.
People jumping through all kinds of hoops here. Let me ask you, Arnold Kriegstein, what is your broad sense then at this point, with South Korea having fallen back so dramatically when it was supposed to have been the leader, but with the restrictions on spending the United States is looking at, do you see the U.S. as the likely future leader in stem cell research, or is that an open question?
Well, I think that's an open question, but I also want to make the point that there's a great deal of public attention to one small aspect of stem cell research, which really involves human embryonic stem cells and, in particular, this therapeutic cloning aspect. That's obviously the most politically and ethically charged area of stem cell research.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an enormous body of work that goes on that's really below the radar that people aren't aware of, and that really is important because it's building the foundation for stem cell biology. Much of that work is actually NIH-funded. It has to do with processes of self-renewal, how these stem cells perpetuate themselves, how they progress in one particular direction, become from unspecialized cell, highly specialized cells, what the gene pathways are. How somatic cell nuclear transfer or cloning actually occurs, how the genetic program of an adult cell gets reprogrammed to turn it into an embryo. And these are really fundamental questions that are being addressed right now. And it is science is moving along incrementally, and the public is not that aware of what's going on. But the real field of stem cell biology is advancing. And, of course, in addition to embryonic cells, there are adult cells, there are a whole range of other kinds of stem cells, which we often know very little about, and research is progressing on all those fronts as well.
Arnold Kriegstein, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
David Skadden, with South Korea having stumbled, Harvard, among a very few others, is now seen at the forefront here. Do you have a green light from your own institution yet to move ahead with on the therapeutic cloning research? And if not, is it because of same ethical concerns.
Well, you might imagine that the number of constituencies involved in this is very, very large, and everyone has a great deal of concern about making sure this is done in the proper way.
So no green light yet.
So the green light is still in the process of being worked through. We think we're at the final stages of that. We anticipate being able to move forward in very short order. But it really took working through things at the state level, at the local level, in our own institutions academically, as well as the healthcare institutions.
You had the governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney, saying we should not do this.
Right. And I think his objections were ones that people considered very carefully. I have to say our legislature deserves a lot of credit for the thought they put into this, but they decided that this was something too important to allow to be held back.
Gareth Cook, where do you see the ethical slash political debate around stem cell research, cloning, standing now?
Well, I think one of the important things you need to understand in this debate is that a lot of people don't understand it in the public. And I think that we've seen over the last few years that the public in general has become more, they understand embryonic stem cell research a little bit more, and as they've understood it more, we've seen in general more support for it, and it's become less of a bipartisan issue nationally. I think with cloning research and with the public is still quite confused, and so I think what's going to be interesting to watch over the next few years is to see what the public makes of it as they begin to understand it.
David Scadden, when you get the green light, where are you headed exactly? Will it be using embryos in part? What about the adult stem cell side of this? That is not to do with embryos.
Absolutely. So the adult stem cell program is really a huge program. This is something that's not just at our center, but at many around the world, and it's very important to recognize that this is a process that it does require as many different perspectives as possible. So we're working with adult stem cells simultaneously with embryonic stem cells.
Do they promise the same therapies that embryonic stem cells promise?
They actually have very different characteristics. Mm-hmm. So while embryonic stem cells have this tremendous capacity to become many different cell types, the adult stem cell can come from a particular tissue and only create cells from that tissue again. So blood stem cells make blood. Mm-hmm. They won't be able to make a beating heart cell. An embryonic stem cell can make both of those tissues and many others.
Would adult stem cells have to come from the prospective patient, or could they come from one adult and be used in another?
Well, they could, in that is the way that bone marrow transplant is often done now, where people donate to another individual. It is possible, though, and this also occurs clinically now, that people donate their own stem cells. The problem is that if you might need neural stem cells, getting those cells is, of course, very complicated. So one of the issues is access to cells. If we have the ability to be able to grow them in the laboratory, as we envision we might be able to do with embryonic stem cells, then accessibility is off the table, and that becomes a very powerful tool.
We've just got a minute left. Do you think the United States is going to be the global leader in stem cell research 10 years out or not?
I think we've got a tremendous culture here of great science. We have a history of creative science that I think is unparalleled in the world. If we can take advantage of the momentum that we currently have, that we'll be able to continue to provide leadership, and I think we'll be able to get to the clinic. Certainly, we hope that international efforts continue in parallel, but we don't see the U.S. as being second-rate in this. We hope that we'll be able to provide support where the federal government doesn't, to be able to maintain that. But we do need engagement. We need engagement from the Bible Belt, from people who have other concerns. The debate must continue, but I think all must realize that there are ethical concerns on both sides. Mm-hmm. People who are suffering need relief. We would like to provide that with this kind of research. Let's do it in a thoughtful way where all of us can benefit.
Gareth Cook, in a word, the U.S. left behind or perhaps in the lead now?
Well, I would say that we're in the lead, but I would also say that there are a lot of very talented scientists around the world, and the way scientists work, the way science works is cooperatively.
I want to thank both of you. It's been a fascinating conversation. Gareth Cook, science reporter for the Boston Globe, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. David Scadden, co-director of the Harvard Stem Cell Institute, director of the Center for Regenerative Medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.